Hey, uplifters. I want to take a minute to talk about something personal to me. In my 40s, I started noticing my hair was shedding more. So a couple of months ago, I started using Nutrafol. I'm already seeing so much less shedding. And my teenage daughter, who notices absolutely everything, keeps commenting on how thick my hair looks. As someone who's built my career around rigorous science, I super love that Nutrafol was the first brand to clinically study hair thinning on menopausal women, which is why I am so proud to have them as a sponsor. Nutrafol takes a whole body approach to hair health, supporting you throughout your life stages. You can see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code UPLIFTERS. Welcome to the UPLIFTERS podcast. I'm Aranza Savas, and today I'm so excited for you to come hang out with me and my friend Lakshmi Rangarajan, the host of the Later Dater Today podcast and a dating coach who specializes in helping people navigate romance in midlife. She brings such a refreshing perspective to dating after 40 and really challenges some of the urgency and maybe kind of desperation stories. You're going to hear in this conversation why standard dating advice fails midlife daters, some questions you can ask to help cultivate meaningful connection. And these are really powerful, whether you're dating romantically or just like friend dating, and the power of our own unique individual stories in forming deep and meaningful relationships. Lakshmi's work in modern dating spans several chapters. She began designing in-person events for singles way back in the 2010s, went on to work at Match.com, and then was hired at WeWork for a first-of-its-kind job as the company's director of workplace connection, a term that she actually invented. Whether you're newly single, have never married, or just curious about redefining relationships on new terms, I hope this conversation will give you some practical strategies and maybe a fundamental mind shift in how we think about love, connection, and possibility at every age. Hi, friend.
Hello.
Hi. So we met way back in our lives as coach trainees, pre-pandemic,
yes,
getting some certifications as professional coaches, mm-hmm. and we got to coach each other and collaborate.
Yes, but you were the one in class that was like, I think what this is, and then you would distill everything into like a 20-second thing that everyone would be like, yeah, that makes sense. That was you.
I like being known as that person.
Yes.
You were the person who asked the really tough questions that sometimes made the instructors stop and think and made us all stop and think. And the more I know you, the more true I know that is who you are.
Oh, yeah, that can be a good thing.
It can be a great thing. The world really needs those people. And I'm really glad to have someone like you in my life who asks hard questions about things that I might not even consider asking.
As someone who coaches people in dating, that's probably a good skill to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Since you bring up dating, your podcast, The Later Dater Today, mm-hmm. your work in dating have taught me so much about what gets in our way when we think about partnering and how we overcome our limiting beliefs and our fears to allow ourselves to connect mm-hmm. professionally, personally, and watching you obsess over those details has made me more thoughtful and intentional. And so as we kicked off this series on late bloomers, when I was thinking about who we needed to hear from, one of the first names that came to my mind was Lakshmi Rangarajan, because I know you have thoughts.
Oh, I have thoughts.
And they will be meaningful for us. So why did you decide to focus your podcast on dating specifically?
when I started it 3 or 4 years ago, I was coming off of the podcast that I'd hosted for Vox Media, which was about the history of the dating industry. I had spent so much time watching dating, and I noticed that everything about dating culture, everything about dating advice, was stemming from who I call the standard dater. And the standard dater is that person that's sort of like in their 20s or 30s, and they are kind of thinking about marriage, long-term relationship, maybe building a family. And so because the information is organized around that outcome, it has deadlines and it has a sense of urgency and it has this sense of like, you have to find out who the good people are and the bad people are, and you have to label things. And that framing gets copy-pasted and then applied to people in their 40s and 50s.
And it becomes truth.
And then that's where it doesn't actually serve people.
Yeah.
Because whenever, you know, same thing with marketing or with health, whenever we orient around the 28-year-old or the 32-year-old, we miss out.
Uh-huh.
And it's not the most useful information. So my basic thing was, what if you centered the 40 and 50-something? What if you centered their experience? And then how would the discussion fundamentally change when you didn't center marriage and the pursuit of family as a primary reason for dating?
What paradigm shifts were there when you started talking about this specifically with older daters?
I mean, so many things. One was just, when I'm on the podcast or when I'm talking to people, the first thing is just even just that realization. Because a lot of times people, whether they have married or not, they're picking up a version of themselves that's in some ways 20 or 30 years old. And sometimes everyone needs a hard factory reset.
Mm-hmm.
And to just rethink relationships fundamentally.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you want now? And how much of that is what you want? And how much of that is actually old programming or things mm-hmm. that other people have told you that you should want? Because they're operating on old programming.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the amount of things that I've learned is like just unbelievable. And then the last 2 years, I focused my research focused exclusively on interviewing and studying men. Straight men, because I really felt like they were an understudied group and sometimes misunderstood. And so I spent a lot of time doing that. But like one of the, I think the most fundamental thing is that you're not dating on what I call a deadline anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no reason to rush. There's no reason to feel like you don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a huge advantage that sometimes people don't see. And you can really shape it for what you want. Like, you know, a lot of times I have clients who are like, oh, but, you know, we have different custody schedules. And, you know, and I was like, sure, that's fine. But how many times do you really need to see each other? And for what duration? And what is the quality of that time? And people sort of realizing like, yeah, I get to like map this out from scratch all over again.
Yeah.
And so that's really exciting just to see people have that realization that whatever they thought was doesn't have to be moving forward.
Yeah. I love that. And so if like in your 20s, subconsciously even, the expectations are I'm on this reproductive clock.
Correct.
And
yeah.
I must mate by this age in order to become a parent. I'm looking for somebody who has financial stability so that we can co-create a sustainable life together, right? If you throw out all of those because maybe you've achieved your own financial yeah. stability, or you have approached parenting in whatever way you've chosen right. to at that point by 40s and 50s, whether it's to have, to not have, to adopt, or to be an aunt or an uncle, whatever,
mm-hmm.
it's mm-hmm. just sort of freeing yourself from those assumptions
exactly.
and then saying, what's right for right now, which is maybe my favorite question in the whole.
Yes.
Like, lexicon of the universe.
Exactly. What is right for right now? And I think that applies so much to dating. I think it's such a liberating space, and I think it's such a creative space.
Yeah. Say more about why you use those two words.
Because again, I think to be able to really ask yourself, what does a relationship mean to me today in this body at this time, right? This is also a unique time. Relationships are optional.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that you actually want? Who do you want to become in a relationship? And what purpose does it serve? And also, like, how do you want to be a part of someone else's story?
Are you getting into a relationship because you want somebody to travel with? Does that person need to be a romantic partner, or might they just be a friend?
Yeah.
A friend and I actually were talking last week about how, as humans, many of us, I won't say all of us, but many of us have this deep need for an exclusive pairing.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think we have historically assumed that needs to be someone with whom we are sexually and romantically invested.
Mm-hmm.
And yet for many people, really the answer is they just want an exclusive partner, like a real BFF or somebody with whom they can feel like, I'm your person.
Yeah, I think like most people just want a certain degree of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you're younger, I think sometimes that clarity is a little bit more clear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as you get older, because this is the downside of it, is that because there's no rules, you actually have to guide that conversation and be okay with a certain degree of either not clarity or figuring it out together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is, it's like a double-edged sword. It's awesome, but then you also have to have the willingness to surf that with somebody else.
And so it is about communication at the end of the day and being able to say to ourselves, this is what I really, truly want and need, and being willing to share that with another human being and say, this is what I truly want and need, instead of hiding it and dancing around it like we are apt to do.
Yeah, I think like one thing I might say is like before the communication, I think is connection.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people get into the, this is what I want too quickly.
Yes, so good. Such a good point. Yeah.
And I think this is where a lot of the dating advice, I think, is misdirected, where it's like, well, I'm looking for this. I'm looking for a long-term relationship. I want this. I want that. And it's like, you haven't even finished your latte, you know, and you're already making demands. And I think people have this idea back to your original premise is like, well, I don't want to waste time with the wrong person. And I think that that belief or that statement or that advice like seems sound on the outside and is actually incredibly destructive for people when they're dating. So much of what I have to do with people is to sort through all the, quite frankly, all the garbage they've ingested about relationships and bad dating advice for 25 years and being like, okay, which of these really makes sense for you? You know, and maybe coming out in the first 20 minutes and saying, well, I'm only looking for long-term relationships is actually the thing that will prevent you from getting into a long-term relationship.
Yeah. And one of the things I say a lot about everything, careers, relationships, you name it, is not everything needs to be everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And not everything needs to be stated.
And so maybe this person is just great for a latte for today and just enjoy the latte and be in the moment. And then you can get curious about whether or not you want to have a second latte with this person.
Right. Because really that is an attempt to control the situation.
Yes.
Maybe instead of that, why not just focus on getting to know who this person is who's sitting across from you.
Uh-huh.
Right, which is the real art, the real skill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happens when you say to people, hey, maybe the way you've been thinking about this is not serving you?
Yeah, usually I get a lot of pushback initially.
Well, nobody's ever offered an alternate
reality or narrative. No. And it's really interesting that you say that. All of my clients come through my podcast. So they're like bought in. You know, it's usually people that are not my listeners where I get the resistance. Like people I just meet out in the world at dinner and they're like, oh, you know, you coach midlife daters. And then they're like, that's the person I have to like contend with. The people that end up coming to me are very bought in. But I would say at a high level, when I'm working with people, generally I'm working with very successful, accomplished people who at some level have some kind of rubric in their head of how things are supposed to unfold or how things are supposed to work. And the problem is most of the rubrics do not work in dating at all. In fact, they work against you in dating. And so I think a lot of the times what I'm running into is people who think they can date, who think they know how to date, but actually don't. And so that is not something that people think to consider, because it's like, well, isn't dating just like going to dinner and like talking to someone and seeing if you like them? And that's the furthest thing from the truth.
Okay, what is it?
Dating is this like it's a very, very beautiful, subtle art of connecting with someone and getting to know them and not just lobbing a question back and forth, which is what most people do. And so that is, it's knowing which of the stories about you you want to tell and not necessarily waiting for this person to ask you the perfect question so that you can finally say something. It's really knowing what is it about you that you want this person to know about you, what stories, what specific things about you, and then how do you inspire that from the other person? And going out on a date is actually a very, very artful thing. And I think a lot of people are kind of like wing it. Like, I'm just going to go on, I'm just going to see how I feel. I'm just going to like go on like four coffee dates. And I think that's actually a huge waste of time. You have to understand dating culture. And that is how you're going to thrive in it and have a good experience. But just sort of like, I understand why people do it because it's like, oh, just put yourself out there. Just get on a dating app. Just do it.
And there is some value, I think, for somebody who's been just sitting at home staring at the walls, hoping and wishing.
I do, but I guess like where I get concerned about is it's just that is like people do have a lot of hope around it and kind of just throwing spaghetti at the wall can actually demoralize somebody.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think it comes from a really good place. And I think that can be good in some instances, but I think it's really important for people to understand what's happened in dating before they get out there.
How does one prepare oneself to date?
Well, honestly, one of the first things that I do is people have to understand modern dating culture and the modern dating industry and what's happened.
What does that even mean?
And then that's like, well, you have to understand sort of like how the apps were developed, how they changed people. What is the typical person that you're going to meet? What have they probably gone through? Mm-hmm. What have they seen? What is the actual, like, what are the actual dynamics of it all out there? And I think that is so important. I think that the people who take the time to sort of understand that just fundamentally show up differently. I think they're fundamentally equipped in the same way that like you could go to a baseball game and not know anything and you could still have a good time and you could still enjoy parts of it, but you'd be missing out if you didn't understand something about the mechanics of the game and the history and like, what do people actually like about this thing? Mm-hmm. You can do that, but you're going to have a fundamentally different experience. And so like, that's one of my favorite things to do with people is just to watch their eyes light up when they just realize, wow, there's this whole history, there's this whole culture behind dating. And it's not just swipe, swipe, you know, put your picture up. There's actually like so much to dig into that can really empower somebody.
Interesting. So it's collecting data so that you can feel more confident, not so that you can feel more overwhelmed, because it sounds intimidating. Like there's this whole history of dating apps and I have to understand all of that in order to get started.
I don't think you have to be a historian, but it would be like if anything, right? Like if you went to a new city or you went to a new, tried a new cuisine, you might just want to have a little bit of sense of like what to look for, you know, without, you know, you don't have to go deep sea diving, but you at least want someone to like tell you what's in the pool and what to look out for.
That makes sense. And then once somebody has their foundational understanding, what do they do?
Well, then I think they try and figure out like how to make it work for them and to not just have an online strategy, but to have like a holistic strategy for all the ways they're going to build connection into their lives, not just dating, but how are they going to build connection with their friends, with their neighbors? And then yes, and then also dating. And like, I think a lot of times people are just like, just tell me what app to go on. And I'm like, no, you know, like, that's not it. Like, that's not it. There are some differences between the apps and they all have like a slightly different tone. And there's some that I would probably recommend to some other people, but it's like, it's kind of doing the stuff before that. Who do you want to be? How do you want to show up? What are the things that you're actually going to talk about? How do you connect? Right? Like maybe conversation isn't how you connect. Maybe you connect in some other way. And then how do we sort of design your dating strategy to highlight the things that really bring your personality out? So just a lot of things that I think are easy to overlook, but can fundamentally change like how you, not only how you date, but how long you're able to be out there. Because I think a lot of people like they get exhausted very quickly. And so it may take some time. And so it has to be something that you enjoy and are not trying to just like get out of this as quickly as possible, because that will have you making less than desirable decisions.
That makes sense. And so you've talked about inviting people to think about that first question they are going to ask another person. And I think whether it's going to meet your neighbors or dating romantically, that the opening is the hardest part. And it's what, in so many cases, deters us from putting ourselves out there. How do you help people think about how to engage when they're meeting someone new for the first time?
I don't like overthink it too much. I think the thing is, like, when I'm getting to know, you know, like people that I work with, is kind of understanding what their strengths are. You know, do they like to open up with a joke? Do they like to point at something in the ambient and kind of make that the starting point? You know, instead of just saying, you know, nice to meet you. Like, sometimes people need almost like a third object, and that's how they lean in. So I don't think it's the same for everybody, but that's part of what I help people figure out, is what are the things that are uniquely them that help them connect with other people. So it's like a two-part equation.
Interesting. And is it the same for the story they want to share? How do people generally decide?
No, it's all different. It's all different. No, because everyone's different.
Yeah.
And if I'm working with an engineer, sometimes their tendency is to think that their job is boring or nobody wants to hear about it. And that could not be more further from the truth. And so sometimes I'll work with them to, like, I had this client and he was telling me about this like fireplace that he had to redesign. It was connected to some like temperature or something. And what he needed help with was figuring out how to tell that story in a more concise way, and in a way that was not about the fireplace, but about how his brain works and who he is as a person and how he problem solves. And so a lot of times what I'm doing is helping people figure that out. Don't just say you're an engineer, which is what a lot of people might think to do. Let's find a way for you to say that you're an engineer that's actually interesting and is you and opens it up for the other person, you know, to enter into the conversation.
Yeah. And I imagine that's through understanding why you really care about being an engineer and what that, where you find meaning in your work.
Right. But it's a thing that a lot of people sidestep. Working at Match, I've studied so many first date conversations, and a lot of people just give responses and answers, and they don't think to really share the contours of who they are. They don't think to do that.
Everything you're saying, I feel like, can just be directly translated to the job hunting experience.
Yes, it definitely can. There's definitely, it's just like, I feel like the stakes are different in dating. And sometimes there's an emotive element in dating that I think brings out something slightly different.
I see what you mean there. Yeah. It's all skills, though, that if we learn them, are valuable in all aspects of our lives.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
So what are some of the it's too late worries and fears that you encounter most often?
Yeah, that's such a good, I think the number one thing that I would say is, like, I have a lot of listeners and I have a very, very even mix. It's like 40% men, 60% women, which is very unusual for a dating podcast, which I'm super proud of. And then also a pretty even mix of people that are divorced and then people who did not marry. And I think one of the biggest, I think, misconceptions is that if someone is in their 40s or 50s and they didn't get married, that they like don't want a relationship, or that they're like meant to be single, or that they're, and that's not necessarily true. What I actually see is some people, this is actually when they were meant to be in a relationship, when there wasn't the deadline, when they're not making a decision, and I'm not saying everyone, but they're not making a decision under duress. And so sometimes they confuse, oh, well, I didn't get married, so maybe I'm just one of those people that's perma-single. And there are people that are definitely, that is their best life. A single life is their best life. But I think there's a much bigger cohort of people. No, actually, this is great for you. This is your moment. This is when you might best be suited for a relationship and to explore dating.
I love that. And I think that plays so directly to this idea of being a late bloomer, right? So
yeah, exactly.
We only think that domain of our lives was defined in our 20s because there was a lot of storytelling that said this domain of your life is 100%. Defined in your 20s. And you're saying, oh no, we're going to redefine it in our 30s, 40s, 50s, 70s.
Totally. And I think what you just said is spot on. There's all this storytelling about how the 20s is when we're supposed to find it. And so if we didn't, there's something wrong with us, or maybe I'm just going to be single forever. Mm-hmm. And I just really believe that I think we can experience all of it. I think we can be like fully single and enjoy all of that. I think we can be in a casual relationship. I think we can be in a very deep relationship. And one of the things I always love to share with people is that when I was at Match, I was mentored by Dr. Helen Fisher, who was the foremost anthropologist and researcher of romantic love. I literally built my career around this woman. I like worshiped her, and it was like a dream to work with her when I was at Match. And she had such an inclusive, broad-based view of love. And this is the woman who is the expert in romantic love. And she found love at the age of 72. Mm-hmm. And got married at 75 and then passed away at 78. Oh. And that doesn't mean that everyone's going to have to wait that long, but we talked about this a lot. And we both talked about how this idea that there's one window is just so destructive. Mm-hmm. And she had one of the most incredible relationships I've ever seen. And it was at 72.
How beautiful. Mm-hmm. And to be able to say that it is impossible to predict the future of our relationships based on the moment we're in now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the thing there is to be open to the possibility. Because she also had to be open to the possibility. She could have very easily been like, hey, well, I'm 72. I guess it's me and my bridge club, you know, or she plays bridge. That's actually accurate. But to always have that part of you not yearning and thinking that your life is incomplete, but also being open to it. And I think that's a very, very like beautiful dance that I also, you know, hope to inspire in people. You can be both. You can be like totally happy being single and also be open to this possibility at the same time.
Say more.
So I think our culture loves labels.
Yep.
And it's
and
like
binaries.
Yes. And I think people, especially in dating, they're either like on or off, as opposed to sort of like always, you know, having this continuous vibration and frequency open to anything. And I understand why it's hard, right? It feels like when you're looking for, you have to sort of actively announce, like, I'm looking for a relationship, I'm looking for a partner. But I've just noticed, like, I mean, that can work, but I think as you get older and you don't have a deadline and you are going to be, I mean, that one of the most interesting things in the 40s and 50s is, you know, how many people are coming back into circulations, for lack of a better word. And you just don't know when it's going to happen or who's going to show up. And I think that that is like really, you know, can be really exciting, but you have to be like open to it.
I'm glad you brought up supply and demand. Because I think that that's one of the things that comes up a lot is there's low supply available. And so part of the reason we think we've run out of time is because we feel like we've run out of candidates. Mm-hmm. I'm making this sound like super clinical and professional now. I'll push my glasses up on my nose. But you're right. It's changing all the time.
It's changing all the time. Yeah. And it's just different. And I think, again, like this idea of like yearning for how it used to be is just like not a helpful exercise. It's different. And then, because if you're just looking at volume, like it's never going to be like that again. But if you're understanding that like it is a dynamically changing dating pool at all times, that's different.
Yeah. I love too that you're alluding to something that I feel like I hear so often women especially talk about. At a certain age, they become invisible and that they are no longer seen as a romantic partner or someone desirable, or losing their own feeling of being desirable. How true is that based on your work?
Yeah, I understand it. And it's also not what I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. And any really, really good dating coach, or anyone who's like studied dating intensively, disagrees with that statement. And I understand why people say it. So like, I totally get why you're saying it. I think one, look, there's always going to be a group of people that are just like, you know, I want to date someone way younger than me, right? There's always going to be that. I don't see that. I really don't. I see a lot of people actually who want to deeply connect at this point in their lives, and they actually would like appear. I think sometimes though, it's being able to connect as peers that is the art, right? And knowing how to sort of still find space. So it doesn't feel like you're at the end of your story. You're still at the beginning of your story. So sometimes I think people confuse youth for someone that just feels like there's excitement about the future. That's really what people are drawn to. It's not the youth part. And I think people confuse that with just younger people typically are more excited about the future. And that is a very magnetic quality. And it's that is what is drawing people in. There are plenty of people in their 40s and 50s that have a lot of excitement about the future, but not as many as, like, it's not as common of a quality, to be honest. And that is one thing that I work with people on, is like, there has to be genuine excitement about the future and not like, all I want to do now is play shuffleboard and, like, you know.
Unless you love shuffleboard and that's like super thrilling, right?
If but it is, but I'm saying,
if people just want to look at TikTok all day, that's probably not so exciting.
I think if you're talking, especially in 40s, 50s, it's different when you get to your 70s. But if you're talking about your life like you're winding down, which a lot of people do subconsciously, that is not exciting.
I was really lucky to be raised by a woman who, when I was born, she was in her 50s and reinventing herself and learning new skills constantly and challenging herself creatively and started her first business in her 50s. And all the women in my family that I grew up around lived until their mid-90s and were doing big, brave things the entire time. And so I just assumed that 50 was kind of the halfway point. And so this thought that like people turn it off at 50, I'm like, fascinating.
Yes.
I was like, oh, no. We're just getting started, girls.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people have this energetic approach towards like their business or, you know, maybe something they want to start a business, but then it's or a career, but then they don't feel that way about their romantic life. And so I would love to see that shift.
Yeah. That's a really good point. And so if you were to give one piece of advice based on all of, not that anybody likes advice, but one insight maybe, based on all of your years of studying this to the folks listening, what would you say?
Learn how to talk about yourself.
And to get started with that?
Listen to how you respond to the question. It's not a great question. So tell me about yourself, right? Like it's not a great question, but it is how like a lot of people, whether that's a job or dating or you meet your new neighbor, you know, like, so what do you do? Or tell me about yourself. Those may not be the greatest questions, but they are the most common questions. So we have to deal with that. We can't magically hope that that's going to stop. Right. That is what you are fed. And instead of being like, oh, I wish people asked better questions, have better answers, have better stories, have better ways to talk about yourself and listen to that. What do you say? Do you say, oh, I'm a teacher and I taught for 15 years and I love my students? Or are you telling a story about the day in your classroom when everything changed? That is like probably the number one thing that I equip my clients with is when they show up on a date, they have like 15 magnetic stories. And they may or may not share all of them, but they are ready to go.
It's almost as if they learn to date themselves first.
I think that's a great way to put it. I think a lot of people don't know how amazing they are.
Yeah.
Like even the guy with the engineer, like he's telling me this story. I'm on the edge of my seat and he doesn't understand. I'm like, wait, hold on. It's Thanksgiving. This fire, this what? It's connected to the HVAC system. And you like figure this all out. And he's like, yeah. And I'm, you know, like, and he's not an exception. Like people tell me their stories. And like, you know, I'm dealing with people that have jobs that, you know, on paper may or may not be considered interesting. Like, you know, lawyers and accountants. And when they get into the weeds and they nerd out, and they're like, no, there was this coding error in the invoice system. And they would never think about telling that on a date. And they absolutely should.
I love that. I love that. It's like if we can see how interesting and magical we are, we can offer that to other people as a gift and hopefully see them and their interesting, magical uniqueness
yeah, you're going to inspire that in someone else. And I think sometimes people think that those stories are supposed to be told later. And I'm like, no, like out of the gate, let's go.
I mean, it's a good reason that people often talk about someone's humor or the amazing stories that they tell when they talk about why they fell in love with someone.
Yes. And right now it's so hard. And also, I mean, one other thing that I would say back to your other question is that, like, you know, I always, one other thing I tell people if they can is stay off your phone for about 2 hours before a date. Like maybe just text because you have to, but don't look at anything. Like the other thing is, like, people are showing up on their dates and their little hearts and brains have been like been in the social media screen blender all day. And it's very, it's really hard to say that, to really appreciate how that really impacts people. And so that's part of another reason why I tell people to really understand dating culture. Like, you're coming to someone, not only have they been maybe on like six dates that week that didn't go so great, or they're like, talking to other people, but like, we don't know what they've been like snorting on their screens and how that affects them. And so like, that is like a tip that I give to a lot of people, that they are like blown away at how it changes things. Just stay off your phone for 2 hours before a date.
It's like Julia Cameron from The Artist's Way talking about the media detox if you want to reignite creativity.
Yes. And I think people forget that it's just as important in dating. It really will change you. Like, your blood pressure will go down. You won't be as, you know, distracted. You'll be, it's one thing to like come and like put your phone away and put it on airplane mode. It's quite another to show up kind of like clean.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of bathed in everybody else's crap. So every guest on The Uplifters nominates another guest. Who would you like to nominate?
I want my best friend, Stephanie Kelly.
Tell me about Stephanie.
Like, I will tear up just thinking about how much I love her. Her birthday is in 2 weeks. We had had a reunion with some of our old coworkers in January, and she had said afterwards, she's like, oh, you know, it'd be so fun. And I was like, what? I was like, if we had a book club with like John and Doug and Kurt, the three guys we used to work with. And I was like, So for her birthday, I'm giving her a surprise book club. John, Doug, and Kurt are going to show up. And we have picked a book that I know she's read. And they're going to read the book. And then we're going to have a book club. So I'm like so excited to do this for her. But she's just like, there's no one outside of my family that I just feel like has my back at every moment. And is always like rooting for me. And we've been best friends for like 15 years. And she's just a remarkable person.
Oh, that's really beautiful. I'll make sure not to announce this before her birthday so that we can not spoil the surprise. As uplifters, we love to uplift other uplifters. How can we support you in your work?
I have like a bigger mission. I always want and hope for people to sort of believe in romantic hope. This is this concept that has run through all of my work. And it's not about being in a relationship. It's not about getting married. It's just sort of this idea of leading and living a romantic life, however that looks like for you. So I think that's my...
What does that look like for you?
For me, that is always having my heart open. And I just feel like it's a really hard time to be a human right now. I think being a human is not easy. And so whenever possible, I try to go analog, whether that's organizing a book club for my best friend and surprise. And like, even that, like remembering that she said that and then wanting to make it happen. And then it took courage for me to email these guys and be like, hey, I have an idea. And they were instantly like, oh my God, I'm in. I'm always paying attention for how I can make something a little bit more human, a little bit more like handcrafted, a little bit more artisanal. That's what I'm doing right now to offset this world of like screens and texts and all that.
I love that. That does sound like a romantic life. And I definitely feel better when the majority of my hours each day are not spent staring at a screen, even though I'm staring at a screen doing super meaningful stuff with other humans super intimately. I also need lots of toes in the dirt time.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think that's also part of it is like, I think I'm very, back to your question about like, what does a romantic life look like? I mean, it looks everything from like watching my screen time, making sure I have paper time and sun time and neighbor time. Mm-hmm. And like little things, like I just moved back to my hometown in October. And, you know, I made a list of like all the people that I definitely want to build a relationship with now that I'm here. Like I'm trying not to just wait for it to happen, but actually saying, no, you are meaningful to me and I want to connect with you. And so not just assuming it's going to happen, but really carving out time for those people.
Just asking ourselves what we want and who we want to be is a really powerful step.
Absolutely.
Both in dating and in cultivating other relationships and aspects of our lives.
Exactly. And even like what I'm describing to me is a form of dating.
Yeah.
Right. The book club, the neighbors. Mm-hmm. I intentionally moved into a building where one of my friends lives. I didn't pick a random building. I was like, I want to live where my friend lives. So those choices, I think, are part of like living a romantic life.
It was really good to see you again, my lovely friend.
Good to see you too.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifters podcast. If you're getting a boost from these episodes, please share them with the Uplifters in your life. And then join us in conversation over at theuplifterspodcast.com. Head over to Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast and like, follow, and rate our show. It'll really help us connect with more uplifters and it'll ensure you never miss one of these beautiful stories. Mwah! Big love.
Painted water sunshine with rosemary and thyme. Dwelling up perplexing, though you find it vexing. Toss a star and hover, be your own best lover. Relish in a new prime, plant a tree in springtime. Dance with idle hindsight, bring the sun to twilight. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa, lift you up, whoa, lift you up, whoa, lift you up.
In the pre-chorus, right?
I was like,
"Mommy, stop crying! Mommy, stop crying! You're disturbing the peace."